For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. July the 5th, we are in Malachim Beis. We're in Perakeh, in the middle of Perakeh. We're up to Pasuk Chaf, verse 20. We're going to go back a little bit for a few reasons. First of all, you probably noticed last time that I was not prepared for the end of Perak Dalet. So I want to fill you in on a couple of things from there. And also, for the end of Perakeh, we have to fill in a little bit of things from the beginning of Perakeh, as you'll see. We'll just fill in a little bit more information. At the end of Perak Dalet, just a couple of things to share, which is that so the stories over there were that when Elisha came back to after bringing the child back to life, so there was a famine, and you had the story over there where they accidentally put a poison or something that was not edible into the food, and then Elisha made it edible. And then after that, at the very end of Perek Dalet, chapter 4, it says, Pasuk Mem Beis, verse 42, V'ish Bami Baal Shalisha, a man came from Baal Shalisha, and he brought to the Ish HaLokim Lechem Bikurim, Esrim Lechem Saorim, Echarmel B'tziklono, So a few things. First of all, the Gemara says that Elisha was not a Kohen. Elisha was actually from Shevet Gad. So how is it that they brought him Bikurim? Bikurim, the first fruits of the, when you have the Shiva Samin and the seven fruits of Eretz Yisrael, the first ones that grow, have to be given to a Kohen, and a non-Kohen is not allowed to eat them. So how could someone bring to Elisha Bikurim? So the Gemara says this was not Bikurim. It's called Bikurim, but it wasn't Bikurim. And the reason why the Navi uses the word Bikurim is to tell you that when someone brings a gift to a Talmud Chacham, it is as if they brought Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. That's why the language Bikurim is used. Now, how much did he bring Elisha? He brought him Esrim. He brought him lechem bikurim, a loaf of bikurim, esrim lechem sorim, 20 loaves of barley, so that's 21, the charmel bitziklono, and one more, that's 22. However you translate those words, charmel bitziklono, 22. Now, as he said, give to the nation and they will eat. So, the Mem Gimel 43, Vayomer Misharso, so his servant said to him, Ma'atein zelifnei me'aish, how can I give this in front of 100 men? So, in other words, it's too little for 100 men. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? This was a time of famine. 22 loaves is plenty for 100 people. That's nearly a quarter of a loaf per person. That's a lot of food, especially in a time of famine. So the Gemara says that Elisha had 100 men per loaf. Meaning there were 2,200 students sitting in front of Elisha. And that's too little, that there should be 22 loaves for 2,200 students. So his servant was saying, how can I feed this to one loaf per 100 men? That's not a meal. So he said, Tein lam v'yochelu, give to the nation, they will eat, because Hashem said that they will eat and they will have leftovers, meaning there'll be plenty. And that was a nace that happened, that the bread lasted and they had leftovers. So we see from here that Elisha had 2,200 students sitting before him. Now that's significant because we will see later that this number was while Gehazi was still his servant. And we're going to see later that after Gehazi leaves, the number is going to change. And that's an important factor to bear in mind. It's going to play into the story later. Okay, now, in Perakeh, chapter 5, we have the story of Naaman. We read the beginning of the story last week, where Naaman, the general of Aram, had Tsaras, and he captured a young Jewish girl who became the maid of his wife, and she suggested that Naaman go to Ish HaElokim, to the man of God in Eretz Yisrael, to get his tsaras healed. The king of Aram, who liked Naaman very much, sent him with a letter to the king of Yisrael, saying, "Heal my general." So the king of Yisrael felt that this was just a way of trying to get an excuse to attack him, because how am I supposed to get rid of his tsaras? I'm not a miracle worker. So when Elisha heard about this, when Elisha heard that he tore his clothing, Elisha sent to him, "Send Naaman to me, and you'll see there is a Navi in Yisrael." So he sent Naaman, and Naaman came to the door, and he expected Elisha to come out with all kinds of fanfare and all kinds of who knows what, incantations, whatever it is, to get rid of the tsaras. And instead, Elisha sent, he didn't even present himself to Naaman. He just sent the message to him, "Go dip in the iodine 7 times, you'll be fine." Naaman was incensed, he turned to leave, he went away in a huff, and while he's traveling, his servants say to him, "Why don't you give it a shot? You know, if he would have told you something crazy, you would have done it. So this is so simple, just do it." So he does it, and his skin goes back to like he was when he was a baby. So he's just overcome by the whole thing. He immediately goes back to Elisha, offers him all kinds of gifts. Elisha doesn't want to take it. And Naaman then says he was so inspired both by what happened and by the fact that Elisha did not take the gift, that Naaman renounces Avodah Zarah. He becomes a Ger Toshav. He becomes a non-Jew, a righteous non-Jew, who commits to keeping all 7 mitzvot. And then we talked last time how one thing he asked for dirt to bring back to Aram, to be used as a mizbeach in Aram. And he said, "One problem I have is that when my master, my king, he's leaning on my arm and he goes into the place of Avodah Zarah and he has to bow, and he bows down, I'm going to have to bow with him." So Elisha tells him, "That's fine, you can do that. Lech l'shalom, it's okay." So we talked about last time whether a non-Jew has to give up his life for mitzvos or not. And we said that the proof from here is inconclusive, whether he does or doesn't. Okay, that was last time. Now, the one point I want to make to you, which is not... it's an isolated point, but it's just good to know this point, which is that when he said, "Can I take back dirt?" That was in Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. The Medrash says over here that the Pasuk tells us in Parashas Kisisa that when we go to the Ola Regel, when we go to the Beis HaMikdash 3 times a year, Lo Yachmod Ishas Artzecha, no one will covet your land, which means nothing is going to happen to your possessions. Here, everybody moves to the center of Eretz Yisrael. That means all the borders are open, and theoretically, the non-Jewish enemies could just walk right in and take what they want. So Hashem guarantees us nothing is going to happen. So the Medrash says that you see from here that Naaman was afraid to even take dirt without permission. Even to take dirt was without permission, he was afraid. So the Medrash says, all the more so that they'll be afraid to take anything, any of your possessions. If he's afraid to even take dirt, so certainly your possessions they're not going to take when you go to the Olah Regel. That's just an isolated point over here. Okay. The question we have to ask ourselves before we go any further, which this story gets more interesting as we move on, but the question to ask ourselves is, why did Naaman have tsaras? Tsaras, we know, is a debilitating skin disease, and it doesn't just happen by itself. Why did Naaman have tsaras? There should be a reason, especially if it plays such a central role to the story over here, and we'll see it plays a bigger role later on. why did he have it in the first place? So the Chazal, our sages, give two reasons. And if you look in the first two psukim of Parakei, you'll see the indication for both these reasons. One reason is, it says that Naaman was this great general, etc. And he was a gibor chayil, he was a powerful warrior, mitzora, but he had tzaras. Pasuk Beis says, Varam yatsu gedudim, they went out as a raiding party, thank you. And vayishbu me'eretz Yisrael nara ketana, they captured a young girl, vatilif ne'eshes Naaman, and she became the wife of Naaman's maid. So the Medrash says, why did Naaman have tzaras? Because he took a young girl from the Jewish people as his wife's maid. As punishment for taking her, therefore he has tzaras. That's one explanation. Even though it says he has tzaras before, it tells us that he took the young girl. Nevertheless, the Medrash still says that that is one of the causes for the fact that he had tzaras. The other reason, the Medrash says, is that in the first pasuk it says that he was a great man in front of his master, for he's the one who had saved Aram, and he was a great warrior, and he had tzaras. So the Medrash says, because he was a Baal Gaiva, because he was arrogant. He was an arrogant person, and because of that, he got tzaras. Because the Gemara tells us, one of the reasons why people get tzaras is for arrogance. And is one of the reasons given in Maseches Erechin, when the Gemara goes through the various averus for which one gets tzaras, one of them is arrogance. So those two reasons, arrogance and the taking of the young girl as his wife's maid. Yeah.
The other thing we know he did is kill
Ahab. Yes, but that's a good thing.
Okay, so just because he killed the king of Israel doesn't count.
No, because that was Bavod Rishoyimina. That was a good thing. It was joy. However, that does play a big role because of the following. Why was Naaman propelled to greatness? Because it says Hashem gave salvation in his hands to Aram, which means he killed Ahav, which ended that war. That was why he was propelled to greatness. He was given the position of general, and he was well liked by the king. That's what we learned before. So how did he kill Ahav?
By mistake.
With an arrow.
Through the joints of the armor.
Right.
It was by mistake.
Right. He just shot an arrow. It says Latumo.
He didn't do it.
He didn't mean to. Like, he just shot it, and it went to the right place.
Shot an arrow in the air.
Right. So, is there anything to be proud of?
No. He aimed and picked this.
Right.
Him really good.
Right. I mean, it was clearly like that. I mean, the arrow happened to get the right. I mean, he didn't even know it was Ahav. Remember, Ahav was in disguise. And Hashem made it that he'd be killed. And he was the only Jew killed in the whole battle, was Ahav. So for Naaman to be proud of this act of killing Ahav is pure arrogance. He didn't do anything. To make himself into something because of that, it's nothing but arrogance. Now, as I mentioned, the Gemara itself tells us that arrogance is one of the reasons for tzaras. So that makes sense. Why would taking the young girl as his wife's maid, I understand it's not a good thing, but why would that merit tzaras? Why would tzaras be the appropriate punishment for having taken the young girl as his wife's maid?
Can he not approach her if he's got tzaras? Does it have anything to
so
do with
that? So it could be. It could be that it keeps him away from her. Although it doesn't seem from here that he was threatening her in that way. Although that is possible. That is possible. We find that when Paro took Sarah from Avraham, he got tzaras. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason for the tzaras, part of it was what Dr. Fari just said, because it prevented Paro from molesting her, which is true. But in addition to that, tzaras, we know, is a punishment for Lashon Hara. But why is tzaras a punishment for Lashon Hara? How is it Mida Keneged Mida? How is it measure for tzaras to be the punishment for Lashon Hara? So The Gemara explains, because Lashon Hara is a divisive act. It causes fighting, it causes anger and resentment. So Lashon Hara causes people who otherwise would be friendly and neighborly to become angry and to stay separated from each other. So the mida keneged mida, the measure for measure is, a person gets saras, and they are now segregated. They have to leave the community. They're quarantined. That's the mida keneged mida. That's a measure for measure. This person separated between friends, between spouses, whoever it is, with their saras. So therefore, this person needs to be separated from everybody else so they can learn not to separate people. So when Paro took Sarah, he was separating between a husband and a wife. He was forcibly separating a husband and wife from each other. Because of that, he got Saras. Later on, in Parashas Shmos, we find that when it's time for Hashem to appear to Moshe in the Sneh, in the burning bush, it says that Paro died. Chazal explained, it doesn't mean he died, it means he got Saras. So why did he get Saras? So the answer is because at that time, it was time to redeem the Jewish people, which means Hashem wanted his nation to be with him. We are compared to the wife in the relationship between us and Hashem, where Hashem is compared to the husband. And Paro was keeping, so to speak, the wife from the husband. He was keeping Klal Yisrael from Hashem. And therefore, he got Tzaras. Until that time, it wasn't time for us to go out yet. So he wasn't keeping us from where we were supposed to be. But once it was time to go out, he was forcibly keeping us enslaved, and therefore he got Tzaras. So here, this young girl being taken away, it's not just that she's taken away from her family, which of course is tragic, but to take a young girl away from her environment, away from her Torah environment, and place her in a pagan environment where she has no support, no family, no mentors. So essentially, he was taking her away from her Yiddishkeit. Mm-hmm. This girl has no way anymore to be connected to Torah and to Yiddishkeit in general, to Hashem. So therefore, it would result in Saras because it's separating her from, really, from her father in heaven. That's really what the main thing is that's happening over here. So those two reasons are given for why Naaman had Saras. In the process of the story, we find that both these things become corrected. First of all, we find that when Naaman approaches Elisha for the first time, look in Pasuk Tes, verse 9, it says, Vayavo Naaman bisusav uverichbo. Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot, and he stood at the doorway of the house for Elisha. Now Naaman did not know the greatness of Elisha, meaning we learned earlier that the Shunamis was afraid to walk into the room where Elisha was. And I told you the story of Rav Chaim Volozhiner and the Vilna Gaon, but being afraid to walk into the room. But Naaman had no previous interactions with Elisha, and therefore, being the great general of Aram and being as arrogant as he was, he could have barged in. He could have, banged on the door and walked inside. But, he wasn't afraid of anybody, physically. But instead, he stands at the doorway. He does not barge in. More than that, it says that he came bisusav with his horses, plural. However, there's a yud missing in the word. There should be a yud between the samach, the last samach and the vav, and the last vav. Bisusav should be spelled beis samach vav, samach yud vav. And there's a yud missing, which means it can be read bisuso with his horse, rather than horses, but only horse. So the Medrash says that Naaman was machnia himself. He humbled himself. He left all of his horses off on the road, and only he approached with one horse. And he did not bring his entire entourage to the front of Elisha's house. He approached with his head down, with humility, to the great man of God. And he stood at the doorway. So he demonstrated a sense of humility over here in coming to Elisha. Now then, when Elisha does not do what Naaman expected him to do, Naaman becomes incensed. There's his arrogance again. So it rears its ugly head again. And he turns away in a huff. But then, His servants approach him. And last week, somebody pointed out that it's an amazing thing. His servants approached him and they said to him, I think it was Mrs. Lewis who pointed it out, that, right? Oh, you did. Okay. Thank you. It was Dina who pointed it out. Thank you. So here, his servants approached him and said, listen, you know, why don't you try it? And Naaman relented. Here, he's angry. He feels insulted. And he got over it. And he said, okay, I'll try it. I'll give it a shot. And he listened to his servants. And he went into the Yarden and he was healed. Had he not humbled himself, he never would have gotten better. It's only because he let go of his arrogance that he goes into the water and he's healed. So you see a turnaround in Naaman, where he starts off as a very arrogant person, and throughout this story, he chips away at that arrogance to the point where he completely humbles himself and makes himself a servant of Hashem. He does not become a Ger Tzedek, he does not become a full-fledged convert, but he does become a Ger Toshav, a non-Jew that commits to the seven mitzvos.
He must have been in a lot of pain. No, seriously.
Could be. Could very well be.
Humble himself.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. The Medrash tells us that the words of Naaman are in certain ways even greater than Yisro. Yisro, who's held up as the great Ger, the great convert. But the words of Naaman in certain ways are even better. As it says in Pasuk Tezvav 15, in 15 in the middle it says, Vayomer, he says, Hinei no yadati, behold now I know, ki ein Elokim b'chol ha'aretz, there is no God in all the land, ki im b'Yisrael. Ki ein Elohim b'chol ha'aretz, there is no God in all the land, ki im b'Yisrael, only among the Jewish people. So he renounces Avodah Zarah, he renounces all other deities. The way Yisro said it was, Ata yadati, now I know, ki gadol Hashem mikol ha'elohim. Hashem is greater than all other powers. He doesn't say there are no other powers. He says, now I know Hashem is greater than all other powers. The way Naaman says it is, there is no other power but Hashem. Now, I'm not suggesting that Naaman was greater than Yisro. Yisro was great. However, in this one phrase, he outdoes Yisro, the Medrash says. So that's pretty significant that he has really turned himself around. Yeah.
But in terms of what Yitro said, there are powers in terms of like the, you know, black magic or things that you're not allowed to do. So it doesn't mean you're desecrating Hashem.
Yeah, right.
You can make that you're making him bigger because he is on top of every.
Right. Yisro was not criticized for how he said it, but still, this is a more emphatic statement. This is a stronger statement. Now, you just have to be careful. All those powers have no independent power. They're all from Hashem.
Right.
That's Avodah Zarah is to ascribe independent power to something. The sun, the moon, whatever it is. Nevertheless, the language here of Naaman is stronger than the language of Yisro. Now, okay. Yeah.
Is there significance in number 7 here? Yeshua went around Yericho, he went 7 times.
Yeah.
And here he's told to dip 7 times.
Yeah.
Is he related?
Yeah, I'm sure that's related. Yeah, that's a good point. That is a good point. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam she'hakol nivra. Now, we need to move on in the story, and we're going to come back to these points. I just want to make one last point, which seems to be unrelated, but let's make the point anyway. When Naaman came back, he wanted Elisha to take gifts from him. And Elisha said no. In Pasuk Tes Zayin, in verse 16, it says, Vayomer, Elisha says, Chai Hashem, I swear by Hashem, Asher amanati lefanav, that I stood before him, imekach, if I will take. Which means I will not take from you. I swear by Hashem, I will not take the gifts. Vayiftzar bo, Naaman tried to, you know, he pressured him. Lakach has to take. Vayema'ein, Elisha refused. So Elisha takes an oath that he will not take the gifts. Okay, let's emphasize that point. Now we're going to move on and read the rest of the parak, and then we're going to tie these points together. Starting with Pasuk Chav, verse 20. So Elisha and Naaman have spoken. Naaman has left. He's headed north to Aram. Vayomer Gehazi. Gehazi said, Vayomer Gehazi, Nar Elisha, Isha Elokim. Gehazi, the Nar, the lad, he's not a lad, he's an adult, but it means the young man, of Elisha, the man of God. It's a lot of words there. Elisha, the man of God. So he said, now he didn't say this to Elisha. He said this either to himself or to whoever was around him. Hine chasach Adoni es Naaman harami hazeh. Behold, my master has held back this Naaman, that Naaman, this Arami, mikachas miyado es asher hevi, from taking from his hand that which he brought. Elisha didn't take it. Chai Hashem. I swear by Hashem, ki imratz di acharav, that if I run after him, for lakachti meito mu'uma, I will take from him something. I can get something from him yet. Here, Naaman saw the great wealth that, Gehazi saw the great wealth that Naaman had brought. Gehazi, as we will see, was very, he was very attracted to wealth. And Naaman came with great wealth, huge amounts of wealth, which he had expected to give to the miracle worker of the Jews. And now he's going back to Aram with all the wealth. And Gehazi wants a piece of the pie.
Yes, he does.
Okay. So he says, I'm going to run after him and I swear, by Hashem, I'll run after him and get it. Get something. Now Gehazi can't just go and ask for the money. I mean, Elisha just made it very clear, we're not taking anything. And he swore, and he refused even when Naaman pressured him. Elisha said no. And remember we said last time, part of why Naaman became a Ger Toshav was not just the tzaras going away, it was how impressed he was with the fact that Elisha refused to take. So Gehazi has to come up with a good story. Chavav 21, Vayirdof Gehazi achari Naaman, Gehazi chased after Naaman, Vayir'e Naaman ratz acharav. So Naaman saw that Gehazi was running after him. So Naaman, of course, having just come from Elisha, now he sees Elisha's primary servant running after him. Well, you know, of course, Naaman is ready to do anything, whatever he says. He fell off the chariot to greet him. Like, he jumped off the chariot. Is everything okay? Like, whatever it is, I'll do whatever, you know, is everything all right? Chavbeis 22, so Gehazi said, shalom. It's, everything's fine. Adoni shlachani lemor, my master sent me saying, hineata ze bo elai shnei na'arim mehar Ephraim mibnei anavim. Just now, two young men from Har Ephraim have come, and they are from the students of the Nevi'im. To na lechem kikar kesef, give now a lechem, bread, worth a kikar kesef. So worth a, you know, give it, I'm sorry, t'nana lahem, I read that wrong. Give to them kikar kesef, a talent of silver, ushtei chalifos begadim, and two changes of clothing. So he asked for, this is significant, a talent of silver is a lot of money, but it's not nearly what the wealth that Naaman had. Naaman had much more than this. But he asked for a talent of silver and two changes of clothing. Now, Naaman is nobody's fool. He's not about to just give things away, especially since Elisha had made a whole point that he's not taking anything. So Naaman says, Vayomer Naaman, Ho'el kach kikaroyim. Swear. Ho'el means swear. Take an oath that you're telling me the truth, and then if you swear, then take double. Take two talents. Vayifratzbo, and he pressured him to take double. Take more than you need. You asked for one, take two. Vayatzar kikrayim kesef bishnei charitim. So he tied up the two talents of silver in two
pouches.
Thank you. Ushtei chalifos begadim, and two changes of clothing. Vayitin al shnei na'arav. And he gave it to his two servants, meaning Gehazi had brought two servants with him. Vayisul lefanav, and they carried it in front of Gehazi to go back to Elisha. Now, Gehazi obviously can't show this to Elisha. So, Vayavo el ha'ofel, and he came, Gehazi came to the ofel, which is like a behind, literally means like in a hidden place. How do they translate it there?
Secluded place.
Secluded place. Okay, fine. He came to a secluded place. Vayikach mi'adam, and he took it from their hands. Vayifkod babayis, and he put it in the house. Vayishalach es hanashim vayilechu, and he sent the men away, and they departed. So he didn't want anybody to know where it was that he had it, and he sent them away. Vehu va, and he came. Vayamod el adonav, he stood before his master. So here we have a very difficult thing to understand. Gehazi is Elisha's primary student. Any one of us, having read this and seen the miracles performed by Elisha, would be nervous to try to pull something over Elisha. We know Elisha is given information.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems to know a lot of things. Remember, when he didn't know why the Shunamis was coming, he was surprised. Hashem didn't tell me. Right? And we explained then why it had to be that way. That Hashem wanted the miracle to come through a more direct intervention of Elisha. So for Gehazi to attempt to trick Elisha is shocking that he would try to do this. And of course, he's going to fail miserably.
Can I just ask a question? So Gehazi wasn't just an attendant. He wasn't just a servant. He was a Talmid?
He was the primary one.
Primary Talmid. Well, that really puts a different light.
Yeah. He would have been to Elisha what Elisha was to Eliyahu. But he fails miserably.
I hadn't really realized this.
Yeah. Yeah, but he fails miserably. It's going to be terrible. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be worse than bad. It's going to be terrible. So he came and he stood before his master. Vayomre lav Elisha. Elisha said to him, Me'ayin Gehazi. Where are you coming from, Gehazi? Now right there, mm-hmm. Gehazi should have been tipped off. Vayomre,
yeah, mm-hmm.
And he said, Lo halach avtecha navana. Your servant didn't go anywhere, just here and there. Nowhere. No, didn't go anywhere. Vayomre lav. So Elisha said to him, Lo li bi halach. My heart did not go. When a man turned from upon his chariot to greet you. Elisha knows the whole story. Was it the time to take silver and to take clothing? And olives and vineyards and sheep and cattle and slaves and maids? Was it time to take all those things? So he's, in other words, saying, I know exactly what happened. And he's asking rhetorically, was it time to do that? Now we know he didn't take all that. The first two things he took, but the other six he didn't. We'll get to that. Therefore, he said, Vitzaras naman tidbak becha uvizaracha le'olam. The tzaras of naman will cleave to you and to your children forever. And he walked out from before Elisha having tzaras like snow. He immediately got tzaras and he will have it till the day he dies. Terrible. He's out. He's out. He's now outside. He's no longer Elisha's servant. He's totally out of, and we'll see. We're not done with Gehazi. We're going to see more about Gehazi.
Is it because he swore in vain that he's going to...
That's one reason. Our sages ask, why did Gehazi get tzaras? Just like we asked in the beginning of the shiur tonight, why did Naaman have tzaras? Why does Gehazi get tzaras? I understand he did something wrong and he's going to be punished. Why tzaras? Why tzaras? So Chazal say four answers to why Gehazi had tzaras. None of them are the same as why Naaman had tzaras. What are the four? So we'll start with what Mrs. Starkman said. One of them is because he swore falsely. And one of the reasons why Tzaras is given in that same Gemara in Erechim that says that besides Lashon Hara, arrogance is a reason for Tzaras, stinginess is a reason for Tzaras, one of them is swearing falsely. That is a reason for Tzaras. He swore falsely. He swore that Elisha had sent him with this whole fabricated story. And he made it up and he lied. He swore, he took Hashem's name in vain. Therefore, he got Tzaras. That's one. Two is that he spoke Lashon Hara. What's Lashon Hara? Define Lashon Hara in a very simple form. Lashon Hara is any speech that does what?
Derogatory.
That, well, it's
false. Misleads.
It doesn't have to mislead. It can be true.
It's
derogatory is good. Derogatory is good. Any speech that is intended to make someone think less of a fellow Jew. That's Lashon Hara. If a person is trying to make someone else think less of a fellow Jew, that's Tzaras. That's Lashon Hara. That's what Lashon Hara is. That's why one of the ways to make amends for Lashon Hara or to prevent Lashon Hara is to explain what one said in a way that would not lower that person in that person's eyes. That's one of the ways around the issue.
This is what he caused Naaman to probably think about Elisha.
So Elisha here had just stood his ground, swore that he wasn't going to take anything. He resisted all pressure to take. And Naaman was very impressed with that. Remember, that's one of the reasons why Naaman became a Ger Toshav, was because of what Elisha had taken. And now all of a sudden, Gehazi claims he's reversed it. Right. And so that's Lashon Hara. That diminished Elisha in the eyes of Naaman. It didn't totally diminish him, but he took him down a notch.
Yeah.
It took him down a peg. He used to be up here, now he's only up here. He took him down a little bit. That wasn't what Gehazi was trying to do. He was trying to get the money, but in so doing, he spoke Lashon Hara. So, one is he swore falsely. Two is he spoke Lashon Hara. Three is the Gemara says, the Medrash says, one of the things that brings Tzaras is Ritzas Raglayim Lehara, running to do evil, rushing to do evil. Brings to Tzaras. We say an alchet on Yom Kippur, right? For ritzas raglayim lahara, our feet running to do evil. So the first oath that Gehazi took was, I swear by Hashem that if I run now, I'll get something from him. I'll get it. So the Medrash contrasts Gehazi's oath with Elisha's oath. The Medrash says, tzaddikim take oaths to help them keep the mitzvos. Elisha didn't want to take the money. He swore he won't take the money. We had a similar story with Rus. Boaz swears that he will not touch Rus until they get married, right? The oath was to encourage himself to keep the mitzvah. Elisha here swears he will not take the money. Gehazi swears to run to do the Avera. So not only is he not swearing to prevent to help himself do mitzvahs, he's swearing to encourage himself to do an Avera. And he runs through an Avera. Running through an Avera is a reason to get Tzaras as well. And finally, the Medrash says that greediness is also a reason for Tzaras. A person who is running after money, a person who is very attracted to money, can't and just will go through any lengths to get money, that is also a reason for Tzaras. The Medrash tells us that in Pasuk Chaf 20, where he swears, he says, if I run after him, the land of the Pasuk is, V'lakachti me'ito me'uma, I will take from him something. I'll get something. I won't get all the wealth, but I'll get something. The word me'uma, which is spelled the way we have it is Mem Aleph Vav Mem Hey, which is the correct way to spell Me'uma, which means something. However, in the actual Navi, there's an Aleph missing. It's spelled Muma. Instead of Me'uma, it's spelled Muma, missing an Aleph. Muma is the same word as Mum. Mum is a blemish. The Medrash says he was Niba Ve'eni Odeyam Asha Niba. He prophesied and did not realize he was prophesying. I will run after him and take from him, so it goes on, a blemish. Now, he literally took from him a blemish because he ends up getting the same saras that Naaman had. Naaman had saras, and the punishment is Naaman's saras will now be on Gehazi. That's the punishment.
But why his children?
And his children. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
It's
a good question. We're going to tackle that probably next week. We're going to see later that Naaman has three sons, and the four of them are together as Mitzorayim, having Tzaras. They're going to play a role in a story which we actually have as one of the Haftorahs, and when we'll discuss the sons there. Because we don't know anything about his sons right now. But there we will find out some things about his sons. So let's hold off on that question. It's a good question. Hold off on that question for now.
Every week is a
back next week.
Now, the Gemara tells us that la'olam yehi smo docha v'yamin mekarev. The Gemara tells us always your left hand should push away while your right hand is bringing close. Don't be docha b'shtei yadayim. Don't push away with both hands, but rather push away with your left hand, your weaker hand, while bringing close with the strong hand. And the Gemara brings examples of people who pushed away too strongly, b'shtei yadayim, with both hands. So the Gemara says one of those examples is Elisha here with Gehazi. And he pushed Gehazi away too strongly. Because Gehazi goes on from here to do more Averos. And Gehazi is one of the infamous people listed in the Mishnah. Ein lo chelek l'olam haba. He loses his portion in the world to come. Now, he loses his portion in the world to come not for what he did here. He does other Averos, which we'll talk about. One of them has to do with the amount of students that Elisha had, which we'll discuss that when we get to it. But Gehazi does enough that he loses his chelek in Olam Haba, he loses his portion of the world to come. And the Gemara does criticize Elisha for pushing away too hard over here. Another person who is criticized is Yehoshua ben Prachya, that the Gemara says that he pushed away a person too strongly, and that person ended up creating a new religion. That religion has been responsible for more Jewish blood than any other in the history of mankind. So there was also a situation of someone being pushed away too strongly. Now, that point about pushing away too strongly, we're going to discuss a different night. That's not for tonight. However, giving Gehazi the tzaras of Naaman was too strong. That's what the Gemara is saying. It was too strong of a punishment. Now, we would never criticize Elisha, chas v'shalom, but only the Gemara can do that. Gehazi certainly deserved punishment, but what level of punishment, that's the Gemara saying, was too harsh.
Can I ask a question? He not only got that, but he got it forever.
Yeah.
So there's two factors.
Naaman's tzaras was forever. That's the thing. It was taken away miraculously. It wouldn't have gone away.
So those are one and the same.
Yes.
You're going to get permanent saras.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that means he had a chance? Did Gehazi really have a chance to also have something done miraculously?
In theory. He could have, Naaman did tshuva. Gehazi also could have done tshuva. But you see, if the Navi itself says that he gave him the tzaras of Naaman, then there must be a relationship between what Gehazi did and what Naaman did. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to say he gave him the tzaras of Naaman. Say he gave him tzaras. Say he gave him permanent tzaras. But to link it to Naaman means, and especially what we had before, that he took the mum, he took the blemish of Naaman, then there must be a link between what Naaman, why Naaman had tzaras, and why Gehazi had tzaras. However, as we've already explained, they are completely different reasons. Naaman, we had two reasons. One was arrogance, and one was taking the girl away. That's two. And with Gehazi, we had four reasons, none of which are those two. We have that he's greedy, we had that he swore falsely, that he ran to do Averos, and that he spoke Lashon Hara. Those are all different than taking the girl and being arrogant.
You don't think that's a part of being arrogant?
It is a part of being arrogant. But the truth is, once you make it that broad, you can fit a lot of things under that umbrella, right? So it's got to be a little tighter than that, a little sharper than that to make it really make sense. So what would be something to link these two things together? You understand that the words tell us, it's announcing to us that you got to look for a connection. The fact that it's calling it Saras Naaman means that there is something connecting these two.
But isn't the connection by the act itself, the fact that he went and took these things from Naaman, that...
Yes, that is definitely a connection. I'm suggesting there must be something more than that within the actual Avera itself. Naaman, what did he do? He was a regular soldier in the Aram army. He was just a regular guy. Maybe he was kind of strong. Maybe he was good with a sword. Who knows? But he was a regular guy in the army. He wasn't the general. He wasn't a recognized... He wasn't a somebody. He was a nobody. And they're having this battle. Aram is getting whipped. They're getting completely decimated by the Jews. They don't know where the King Achav is. They were given instructions to only attack Achav. They don't know where he is. They make a mistake and attack Yehoshaphat, but then they realize they got the wrong guy. They don't even know where he is. Naaman, in desperation or whatever it is, takes a sword, shoots a sword, it flies through the air, it hits the right person, and just as his armor is slightly bent or whatever, it's just at a joint, just as he moves a little bit, it sneaks its way right into that very tiny opening, and it kills Achav. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. And Naaman is propelled to greatness. So Naaman was given essentially a miracle. It may not have been an open miracle, but you can't have that happen and say that there was any skill to that. It certainly has God's hand written all over it. And yet, Naaman instead uses it to his benefit to become this great general. He's proud of himself. Look what I did. He's arrogant. He does not give any respect to the Jews or to Hashem. Here he takes a Jewish girl as his wife's maid. It's, as far as he's concerned, Jews are good to be slaves. That's what they're for. So Naaman was shown, given, an incredible act, divine act, that was done through him, and he ignored the message completely. Throughout the story, he begins to reverse that. And when the tzaras goes away, he allows himself to be affected by this. And he goes and he ends up becoming a Ger Toshav. So Naaman did not take any lesson in what he had witnessed. Gehazi is living with Elisha. He's his primary attendant. Gehazi is seeing incredible things. All the miracles we read about, he's seeing. Nobody knows more firsthand than Gehazi, that Elisha is being given information without having any reason to know it, that Elisha is predicting things and they're coming true, and that it seems like, you know, remember, the Shunamis said to her husband, I know this man is Kadosh. I know he's holy. Let's build him a room because I know he's holy. The Gemara says, how did she know he was holy? She saw that flies never flew over his table. And we talked about that. I told you what I think every time a fly flies over my table. Right? So she saw that. So here, she didn't live with him all the time. She only had him as a guest a couple of times and noticed that he's a holy man. Gehazi is serving him his meals all the time. He doesn't see it. Like, what? And then, not only does he not see it, he tries to pull one over him. He tries to trick him. Gehazi is living with this incredible person, and he's not getting anything out of it. He's not growing from it. He's not becoming a better person from what he's seeing. We talked about this when we discussed Esav and Ovadia. That Ovadia, who is from Edom, Ovadia was the one who has the prophecy against Esav. We explained why Ovadia, because since Ovadia comes from Edom, so one of Edom's own says the prophecy about the destruction of Edom, of Esav. But more than that, the Gemara says, because Esav lived amongst two tzaddikim, Yaakov and Rivka, and he didn't learn from them. Ovadia lived amongst two Rishoim, Achav and Izevel, and didn't learn from them. So let the tzaddik, who didn't learn from the Rishoim, let him come and say the prophecy against the Rasha, who didn't learn from the tzaddikim. Mida kenegen mida. Here we have a similar idea, where Gehazi is being shown regularly greatness and what it means to be kadosh, to be sanctified, and he does not allow it to affect him. He remains a greedy person. He remains a person who is so attracted to money that he swears he's going to go get it. And he makes up a story. He's driven by that. Naaman was a person who likewise did not allow himself to be affected by an incredibly divine act, and instead used it to his own advantage. As Naaman is finally coming around and the Tzaras goes away, Gehazi now, in his act, is given the Tzaras of Naaman. Yeah.
How could Gehazi possibly rise to the level of being the primary Talmud and the attendant of Elisha, number one? And number two is, how could Elisha possibly not get who Gehazi actually was?
So how he could rise there is because Gehazi did have great potential. Anybody who falls that far has to have been a potentially great person. All the people listed in the Mishnah are people who were great and fell. Yeravam ben Nevat.
Right. Yes.
He was of the greatest in his generation, and he fell precipitously. Doeg ha'adomi, Achitofel. These are great people who fell precipitously. Gehazi potentially could have been a great person. He had what it took to be the successor to Elisha. Just as we go from Eliyahu to Elisha, it could have gone from Elisha to Gehazi.
So he wasn't like this the whole time that he was.
This is a progression. It's a progression.
He built resentments. And it seems to me that that's what he did. He made certain choices and built resentments against Elisha.
I don't know, against Elisha, but not
the
to be...
idea.
Yeah.
So he wasn't intrinsically like this all his life.
Correct.
Okay.
Had the potential.
But we had seen earlier that he squandered an opportunity to have the resurrection of the Shunamis' right. son come through him. Hashem would have allowed him to be the vehicle to bring the boy back to life. It's pretty special. He squandered it because he couldn't keep his mouth shut. That's what we learned before. He was a great person, but he fell precipitously.
So how did Elisha not catch on before?
So Elisha did catch on. See, Elisha did. It's not that Elisha didn't know, but Elisha was hoping he would. You know, it wasn't this. This story right here is where it shows itself. This is where it comes out that he finally. It's the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Okay.
Right. Just one last point before we break for this evening. The story of Gehazi is going to continue, as we still have to talk about what did he do to lose his chelak in Olam Haba. What did he do? This wouldn't warrant losing. I mean, the tzaras is bad enough. But what does he do? And also the stories that are going to come up. But just one last point, which we brought up and didn't answer, which is in Pasuk Chavav, in 26, Elisha lists 8 things that Gehazi took, rather than the 2 that he took. So the Gemara tells us that, now, this is something which is ripe for an explanation. I don't have one right now. I wish I would have one. Maybe in the future we'll make a presentation. But the Gemara tells us that at this moment, when this story takes place, Elisha was learning what sugya, what topic was Elisha learning with Gehazi at this time when this whole story happens. What were they learning in the yeshiva? He had 2,200 students. What were they studying at this time? They were learning Shmona Shratzim. Shmona Shratzim are the 8, they're 8, they're not all rodents, but they're like rodents. Mm-hmm. It listed in the Torah in Parashas Shmini. Those of you who are in the Sunday night class will know about it. They're 8, they're not all creepy crawly. Right. I mean, they're not bugs.
Right.
One of them is a toad. One of them is a lizard. These small animals, mice, that have special halachos for tumah and tara. These 8 are distinct in the way they are treated with the laws of tumah and tara, of purity and impurity. They're also distinct in the laws of Shabbos. In fact, one of the chapters in the Mishnayos and the Gemara of Shabbos is entitled Shmona Shratzim, the 8 Shratzim, because that's what the chapter talks about. So there's a discussion over there. It has to do with trapping them. It has to do with causing a wound in one of them on Shabbos. What would be the halacha? It's different than other animals. So they were studying Shmona Shratzim. So what Elisha was saying to Naaman is, Elisha was saying to Gehazi, was now the time to take your reward for the study of Shmona Shratzim, the 8 Shratzim? That's why he lists 8 things. Because what he's saying to Naaman is, are you thinking that now is the time to reward yourself for the study of Torah that we were doing? That you wanted 8 things, now you only took 2. But you were thinking in your mind, I learned about the 8 Shratzim, I deserve 8 treasures for having learned the 8 Shratzim. So that's why Elisha lists the 8, because this is what Gehazi wanted. He wanted 8. He felt he deserved the 8 because of having studied about the 8 Shratzim. So that's why 8 items are listed. Now, the simple and obvious point over here is that Gehazi was hoping to get rewarded with material things for the most powerful of all mitzvot, which is the study of Torah. And he was willing to squander what he would get in the next world for treasures in this world for the study of Torah, which is a sense of where his priorities are. What is ripe for a great discussion is what do the 8 Shratzim have to do with this whole story, and which of course would mean understanding well the differences between these 8 and other animals with Tumah and Tara and with Shabbos. It would have to be a real understanding over there. So because of my deficient knowledge in that, I'm unable to present to you a good explanation for what has to do with this story. But maybe one day we'll come up with something.
He did get 8 if he got 4 talons and 4 changes of clothing.
No, he only got 2 and 2.
I thought he got 2 for each.
No, I don't think so.
Because he asked for 1 for each. And he gave him double, so it was 2 for each.
I don't think he asked for one for each. I think he asked for 1 and 1.
Because it says he got 2 in 2 pouches. 2 talents of silver in 2 pouches.
I didn't read it that way. But maybe you're right. I don't know. I thought it was 1 in each. But okay, could be right.
Did we discuss how Gehazi could have dreamed that he would get away with this?
So that's going to be because where he was. You know, you rationalize and you rationalize. You give them blind. You just rationalize everything. It becomes so important to you
right.
that you can lose. I mean, that we see people create their own.
That.
People create their own realities. It's incredible when people when they really want something,
yes,
they create their own realities, and it's totally false, and it just, you know,
justify anything.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.